Hey guys, and welcome to the show. I'm coming to you live from Marshall Space Flight Center. And of course, when you see it, it won't be live, but it's live right now. And today we have a great show. We've got the first of a series of Windows 10 shows. Today we're going to talk about Windows 10 and security, and we have the awesome Brantley Whitley with us. So without further ado, let's play the music. Hey, Brantley, how you doing, bud?
Hey, Lex, I'm doing well. I hope you are.
I am, yeah. You're usually where I am, and I'm out in outer space.
Yes.
So we've done a whole series of security stuff. Lots of security shows, actually, this last season. And I really wanted to do a show that where we focused on Windows 10, you know, our big future OS that's coming out within about 4 weeks of the recording of this. Of course, by the time that this releases, we'll be a lot closer to release date, which has been officially announced, right? July 29th?
Yes, sir. That's my understanding.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited. I've been playing with every preview build since it was available to us, and the evolution even during the preview has been pretty interesting to watch.
I agree, yeah. A lot of exciting stuff. From the security perspective on Windows 10, a huge investment. And I'm just going to cover one topic today because we could talk, you know, for the next 3 or 4 days just about the investment that was made in security. But, yeah, very exciting. I'm very much looking forward to the release and seeing our customers use these new features and hopefully get secure.
Yeah, so that's a good, so we've, you know, it seems like every OS that we release, we make it more and more secure, and Windows 10, I'm assuming, is going to be no different, right? It will be much more secure than any of our previous OSs, so I'm hoping that what I can do today is get you to kind of dive into some of that.
Yes, absolutely, and I think that was the goal from the security team, was to definitely make it the most secure version of Windows we've ever released. And a lot of the things out there around credential theft that's been, we've been chipping away at it for the last couple of years. And I think this release, we've made some really great strides towards you know, that effort and making sure that we're you know, doing everything we can to keep those credentials as safe as possible.
Yeah, and that's a great point because when most people think of a security breach, they think that somebody performed some magic, right, against some algorithm somewhere and broke the algorithm and, you know, is reading your email even though it's on the wire encrypted. And, you know, that's just not the case. Most of the security issues that we run into are credential theft based, right? Somebody sends you some sort of social engineering email, steals your hash, or you know, figures out what your password is because you use the same password on every site that you ever visit. And so that credential theft is huge. I mean, that's really, I think, probably 80 to 90% of the security-related issues that we see are start with some sort of credential theft.
Yeah, I agree. The security landscape has changed drastically. Attackers are getting more sophisticated, social engineering, and, you know, most people have email today, and, you know, it's a delivery system for those types of attacks to get bad code on a machine that's going to do bad things and compromise credentials.
Absolutely. So I understand you've got a slide presentation for us today.
That's correct.
Okay, well, I think I'm just going to turn it over to you, and if I see anything that I have any questions about, I'll just ask.
Okay, so let's dive in and look at what is Credential Guard. We're presenting on Credential Guard today, and that's a new feature in Windows 10 that uses hardware-based virtualization to create a security boundary. So we really want to keep those NTLM hashes and Kerberos tickets secure, so we're using a hypervisor virtualization scenario to encase that into a security boundary. And it really is the building block for all the security promises in Windows 10. And of course, what we're trying to do here is prevent or mitigate pass the hash or any type of credential extraction attack. So we'll store those credentials in what's called an isolated user mode or IUM process, and that's, you know, moving forward, you'll probably see that a lot, especially if you go out and start reading about the new security features. You'll see IUM, that's a new acronym for the product team has deemed this isolated user mode.
Yeah, that's really cool. So for people that aren't familiar with Pass the Hash, go back and look at some of the previous episodes of Taste of Premier. We did one on Pass the Hash a while back. That's an excellent episode. So I highly recommend watching that so that you understand what Pass the Hash is if you don't currently understand what Pass the Hash is. But my other question for you, Brantley, is this is on by default. This is just built in. We don't have to turn it on or anything. This is native.
Yeah, we'll get to that. It's a feature. You can manage it via group policy, and there's some of the how to configure and the requirements later on in the presentation. But it's something you'd have to enable, but it's built in. It's part of Windows 10 Enterprise Edition for, you know, our enterprise customers, and it's one of those features that requires domain join, so you need Active Directory and those types of things to invoke all the features, enable all of it. But absolutely, we'll get into that in the next couple of slides.
Okay. And so if this isn't on, do we act like Windows 8.1?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. If the requirements aren't met and you don't have the right hardware and certificates and the dependencies for it to work, then yeah, absolutely, we don't spin up that isolated user mode. That's my understanding based on some of the reading of the early documentation and some of the talks that I've been a part of or listened to.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, and like you touched on the history of credential theft, I know you've done a couple of Pass the Hash talks on this show before, and we'll touch on that here briefly. You know, in previous versions of Windows, kernel mode drivers could inject code into LSA or the lsass.exe, the LSAS process. So that's really how attackers were able to get those NTLM hashes and do lateral traversal through the network. So once you have administrator credentials or debug privileges on a machine, that is exposed in memory to an attacker. So you know, that's just a high-level overview of that attack, Pass the Hash, and credential extraction. And this is an illustration from some of the folks, some of our technical writers put together of the isolated user mode architecture. So it looks like on the left-hand side, you'll be looking at the isolated user mode process. And on the right is the typical LSAS, LSA process and how it's worked in previous versions of Windows, and you can see in the attacker, the admin level attacker in the middle, has full access to the memory for that. Once you have debug privileges or administrative rights on a machine, you can pull secrets out of that memory space. That is not the case here with this new feature, the isolated user mode. You have this hardware-based virtualization boundary where the credentials are stored and encrypted, and the administrator is not able to directly access that memory. They must go through LSA, and the credentials are encrypted and stored there, and that's the only place they're stored, and it's strict signing is enabled so that a regular user mode process or a driver wouldn't be able to get into that space. So there's no drivers allowed into that isolated user mode space.
And that's the LSA, LSO.exe section?
Yes, yeah, that's
awesome.
Correct.
Cool.
And this is another example. Strict signing is enforced, and you can see that in normal mode, you see LSA or LSAS over on the right-hand side, and then you have the user mode, isolated user mode on the left, and the keys that are there. So we have stubs over there for support for NTLM and Kerberos authentication. So the beautiful thing about this is we are not dependent on some exterior dependency, like if you have Windows 2008 or 2008 R2 or 2012, 2012 R2 domain controllers, NTLM and Kerberos behave the same as they're not aware that you're isolating those secrets in user in an isolated user mode. So there won't be some domain functionality or domain controller requirement for you to get this feature enabled. So you can use Windows 10 Enterprise domain joined, and as long as you meet the hardware and software dependencies on the client machine, you can move forward and start protecting those secrets now, which I think is really good. It's not there's not a huge barrier to entry to get into this scenario, which I think is a great feature and a great thing to keep our customers moving forward and not having to do a huge migration of both client and a server OS.
Yeah, so it's just a group policy setting. Strict signing is enforced up at the top. Does that mean all we have to do is turn on a strict signing GPO? Or
There's a set of GPOs to get this enabled. I don't cover all the details, but I think there's a paper out on TechNet that covers the specific GPO settings that you would enable to that you would set to get this enabled. And you can do an MS Info 32 if you want to know if your client machine has this enabled. Down at the bottom of the MS Info 32, it'll tell you about device guard and credential guard and what the settings are and if it's enabled or not.
Awesome.
So one of the concepts I think that the product team and how they approach this is they just assume that the OS is owned by an attacker, and that's kind of the landscape we're in today. If you assume that the kernel is compromised, you have a better chance of success of keeping those credentials secured with this virtualization-based security, so that you know that you have a trust level that is higher than all the other normal mode processes. So whether they have admin credentials or not, it's going to be difficult to get into that space and get those credentials. So I think that's a really good design concept to just assume that some phishing attack has been successful. However, the credentials and the secrets are still secure based on the virtualization-based security.
Yeah, that's awesome. That solves a myriad of issues that we've seen in the past.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the requirements, we talked a little bit about that. We've touched on this a little bit. Windows 10 Enterprise, Hyper-V host with TPM 2.0, UEFI 2.3.1, and then the Intel VTD capabilities on your CPU. And it can be configured via group policy. And like we said earlier, it's not completely enabled by default. You need to meet these requirements and then set the group policy up to enable that.
Okay, and so is this all the, or go back one, sorry.
Sure, no problem.
So is this all of the requirements? Is this the entire list? So you have to be running Windows 10 Enterprise, you have to support Hyper-V host TPM 2.0, and most boxes today I know support at least TPM 1, right? I don't know how widespread TPM 2.0 is, but it could be completely widespread. I just wouldn't know off the top of my head. And then UEFI, again, a boot process, 2.3.1. So as long as all of this is met, then you can enable it via group policy, correct?
Correct, yeah. This is just sort of the baseline to get you ready to configure this feature.
Okay.
And we talked about compatibility. So with credential guards, compatible with down-level domain controllers and file servers. If you've got Windows 2003, 2008 file server, it's not going to prevent you from accessing it. So from the outside of the Windows 10 workstation or scenario, it's not really, no other systems are aware that this is taking place because they're leveraging stubs in that user mode, isolated user mode, to implement the Kerberos and NTLM authentication protocol so that they behave as they have in the past. So really that's a good compatibility scenario, so there's no real outward dependencies to make this happen. One thing that is compatibility scenario, and hopefully customers aren't still using this. I'm sure maybe some are, but credential guard you need to disable MSChat v2 and NTLM v1 crypto, because the that process is more like an oracle. You can interrogate and ask it questions, and with those weaker crypto algorithms, it would be more susceptible to being able to infer what specific secrets were there. If I remember correctly, it's using AES 256 encryption in memory in that space to store the secrets, so to encrypt those secrets. So there is a, if you're dependent on NTLM v1 or MSChat v2, you're going to want to not enable this at the moment, or at least get away from that. But really, as an all-up security guideline, you probably want to get all of your domain admins, enterprise admins, privileged accounts running a Windows 10 enterprise, and get those credentials secured on a secure platform, a platform that can really secure these credentials. And hopefully you don't have any of those older, weaker protocols in place for those specific users.
What I think you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that we will not service MSChat v2 or NTLM v1 requests from a box that's running IUM.
Correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
Just making sure. Just making
yes.
sure.
Yeah. And, the MSChat stuff is typically for, VPN or some sort of remote access scenario. So hopefully that's not going to play into your day-to-day admin work from a desktop or a laptop, in the office. And the NTLM v1, it's hopefully most folks have their domain policy set to require NTLM v2.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think NTLM v1 is fairly rare nowadays, although nothing surprises me anymore.
Yes, yeah, definitely something to check out and put out on your checklist when you get ready to move forward with this.
Okay.
And so without computer credentials being secured, we need to prevent shim attacks as well. So what we really want to do all up here is protect all of the credentials on a machine, on a computer, and computer accounts, a security principle, just like a user account, or similar to a user account, I should say. So we need to really be able to prevent the machine credentials from being compromised as well, because there's areas in the network that may have authenticated users or domain computers or any security groups that your machine's a member of. It's you get a TGT for the computer, and you can sort of walk around in a domain. I wouldn't say that it would have a large number of rights on a domain by default, but still, you want to prevent any credentials from being compromised. That includes the workstation. So in Windows 10, we want to get the machine credentials in that isolated user mode as well. And starting with Windows 10, it supports asymmetric key authentication for the computer accounts, just like the user account with a smart card. So that's very good. I think that allows you to prevent the extraction of those credentials as well, so that it's not just the user or security principles for users that we're as concerned about. We also want to make sure that computers are secure as well. And that really piggybacks on the silos and authentication policies. When you talk about securing privileged accounts, you want to ensure that those accounts are logging on to machines where that machine's credentials have not been compromised as well. So starting with server 2012 R2 domain controllers, there's silos and authentication policies that you can set such that you can enforce privileged accounts can only log on to a subset of workstations that meet policy requirements. So that really is a solution here that helps bind the user and computer credentials together. And when you marry that up with Kerberos armoring that was in 2012 R2 as well, where you sort of piggyback your user credentials on the machine credentials, you really have a much more secure scenario than you do with previous versions of Windows.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing customers take advantage of it. And just to summarize all of what we've talked about, the isolated user mode binds computer keys to the isolated user mode. So you get the machine credentials are secure. So when you know your machine's credentials are secure, you can get a user, insert a smart card, and that's really armored so that you're preventing some sort of shim from between your smart card and your isolated user mode for the machine key. So you're really able to armor your smart card credentials. And then we retrieve a Kerberos TGT just like we always have and an encrypted NTLM hash from the DC. And that is passed over to the isolated user mode, and it's decrypted in that space. And as we know, that's virtualization-assisted security. So it's a whole other space that's virtualized, and it's not accessible from other user mode processes, and it runs in a higher security ring than a normal user mode process would be. So it wouldn't be accessible even with debugging tools, which... You know, that can be difficult to troubleshoot from that perspective, but that's a caveat here. It'd be difficult to connect to that space and debug it, or you can't debug it because it's inaccessible from a debugger. But the result is you have NTLM single sign-on without extractable NTLM hashes. And then again, our trust boundary sort of moves down to the hardware at this point and less about the software environment. So your UEFI, isolated user mode, and then your hardware really is where the trust boundary resides then. So if you have some zero day in the UEFI, or there's some hardware, or you've got extensions to UEFI that have problems or holes in it, then that really becomes where the trust boundary is, because that user mode is strictly signed using keys to get access to.
Okay, yeah, that's just awesome. I'm very excited. I know that this will solve a lot of issues for a lot of people, especially in my space, right? Because my customers are all federal government customers, right now there's a lot of security related things going on. I think this is just going to be awesome.
I agree, and I really think it'll complement our ESEE offering and help with a lot of the advanced configuration to get those privileged accounts into a separate forest so that those keys, those hashes are really protected. I think this will be a huge complement to that offering that we have from our consulting team and Premier.
Yeah, absolutely. It's another component, right? We've got the Emmet stuff now. We've got the AD security wrap, so people, can look at how their AD is constructed, make sure that it's built securely. Now we've got IUM in Windows 10, just making some huge advances in security.
Yeah, and this is just sort of scratching the surface. There's several other. There's auditing changes and, the FIDO alliance with us and some of the other vendors where you can do sign-on with your phone or a mobile device with near-field communications and really getting away from passwords in general. That's a huge space that I really think will take off in the next, hopefully in the near future, very near future, but I think that's going to help mitigate a lot of these username and passwords that we've been relying on for the last, since I guess really the beginning of computing, where you needed any sort of security boundary, you needed a username and a password, and we still along and still dependent on that.
Yeah, so I was talking about that last night. I was eating dinner with one of my customers, and we were talking about that. You know, back in the day, it was all share-based security, and every share just had a password, and most of those passwords were sent via clear text, right? Because what's safer than electricity? It's bytes on the wire. How could anybody ever read that, right? But in reality, it was all clear text, so anybody with a network sniffer could easily figure out who you were connecting to, what the share name was, and what the password for the share was. It was so simple, it was actually ridiculous.
Yeah, and that definitely was the landscape at the time, and the need... I guess for tighter security was after the fact when people started realizing that, and hopefully we're making huge strides towards getting in front of the landscape that we're facing today.
Yeah, so if people want more information about this, where can they go?
So there is a really good talk that Nathan Ide did. It's out on YouTube. He is a principal software engineering lead, and I would recommend watching his video because it's a lot more in depth than what we covered here today, and it's from the design and architecture side as well. And he does a great job at presenting on this material, and that's a source that I've used that is available externally.
So that was awesome. That's great, man. I wasn't aware of a lot of that.
Well, thanks, Lex. I appreciate you having me today. And if you're out there and you haven't downloaded the technical preview for Windows 10 or it's past July 29th, definitely get that installed and start checking out some of these new security features.
Absolutely. And we'll put the link up for people that haven't downloaded it yet. But I think if you just go to Windows.com, right? Isn't it Windows.com/preview or something like that?
I think that's correct.
Yeah, I think so. But we'll put the proper link up there just in case that's not correct. And that's awesome, man. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this for us. If you've got time later, maybe we can have you back. And you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on other features and functionality in Windows 10.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to it.
Well, guys, that's the show. So without further ado, that's your Taste of Premiere.